The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Welcome to Beyond, an hour-long program of science fiction, fantasy, and adventure. If you enjoy the program, please drop a line to beyond3x5@gmail.com.
Project Hail Mary, Episode Number 6. An alien ship has joined the Hail Mary and communication is begun with each ship's lights. A cylinder is launched from the alien ship, and our scientist catches it, examines it, and discovers it's a model of this space with planets, stars, and the Petrova line. He comes to the conclusion that the alien is also trying to understand what the Petrova line is doing. Our scientist figures out he's in the Iridian system, and Tau Ceti is their sun. He now names the ship Blip A. And now for part 6. Aliens. Actual aliens. Aliens from the 40 Eridani system. So I guess that makes them Eridanians? Hard to say, even harder to remember. Eridanians? No, how about Iridians? Sounds kind of like iridium, which is one of the cooler sounding elements on the periodic table. Yeah, I'm going to call them Iridians. And I think it's pretty obvious how I should respond. I thoroughly searched the lab a few days ago. There's an electronics kit in one of the drawers. The trick is remembering which one. I don't remember, of course. It takes me a while of searching and not quite swearing while I do, but I eventually find it. I don't have any xenonite. That's what I'm calling this weird alien compound, and no one can stop me. But I do have solder and a soldering iron. I break off a little piece of solder, melt one end, and stick it to the Tau Ceti sphere. It sticks pretty well, which is a relief. You never know with xenonite. I check, double check, and triple check to make sure I correctly identify which one of the little stars in the model is Sol, Earth's sun. I solder the other side of the wire to Sol. I search the lab until I find some hard paraffin, with some poking, open flames, and mild swearing. I'm able to make a really poor approximation of the Petrova line icon they sent me. I smush it onto Sol in the model. It looks all right, at least good enough that they should get the idea. I take a look. The sleek, thin lines of the xenonite whiskers are ruined by my crooked blob-ended solder edition wax model. It's like someone added a crayon drawing into the corner of a Da Vinci, but it will have to do. I try to screw the top and bottom of the doohickey back together. They refuse to mate. I try again. It still doesn't work. I remember that Iridians use left-handed threading in their screws, so I do what to me is an unscrewing motion. The two pieces connect perfectly. Time to throw it back to them, politely. Except I can't. Not with the sharp spinning around like this. If I tried to step out of the airlock, I'd go flying into space. I grab the doohickey and climb up to the control room. I strap myself into the chair and order the ship to spin down. Like last time, I feel the room tilt, though this time it tilts the other way. And again, I know it's not actually tilting. It's my perception of the lateral acceleration being applied, but whatever. I feel the gravity decrease and the tilt of the room reduce until I'm back in zero G again. This time there's no disorientation. I guess my lizard brain has made its peace with the fact that gravity comes and goes. The operation ends with a final clunk as the reoriented crew compartment seats into the rear half of the ship. I get back in the EVA suit, grab the doohickey, and head out into space once again. I don't need to work my way across the hull with tethers this time. I just clip my tether in the airlock. The blip bay has stopped spinning. Probably did it when the Hail Mary stopped. And it's still 217 meters away. I don't have to be Joe Montana to make this pass. I just need to set the doohickey in motion toward the blip bay. It's over 100 meters across. I should be able to hit it. I give the doohickey a shove. It floats away from me at reasonable speed, maybe 2 meters per second, roughly a jogging pace. This is communication of a sort today. I'm telling my new friends that I can handle slightly faster deliveries. The doohickey floats off toward the Iridian ship, and I head back into mine. Okay, guys, I say, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. If astrophage is your enemy, I'm your friend. I watch the telescope screen. Occasionally, I look away. Sometimes I play Klondike Solitaire on the Navy panel. But I never go more than a few seconds without checking the telescope. A thick pair of gloves harvested from the lab earlier tries to float away. I grab them and wedge them behind the pilot's seat. It's been 2 hours, and my alien friends haven't had anything to say. Are they waiting for me to say something else? I just told them what star I was from. It's their turn to say something, right? Do they even have a concept of taking turns, or is that purely human? What if Iridians have a lifespan of 2 million years and waiting a century to reply is considered polite? How am I going to get rid of this red 7 on the rightmost pile? I don't have any black 8s in my deck and movement. I spin to the telescope screen so fast my legs float out into the middle of the control room. There's another cylinder coming my way. I guess the many-armed hull robot thing threw it just a moment ago. I check the radar screen. Blip B is plugging along at over 1 meter per second. I only have a few minutes to suit up. I get back into the EVA suit and cycle the airlock. Once I open the outer door, I spot the cylinder tumbling end over end. Might be the same one as before, might be new, and this time it's headed straight for the airlock. I guess they saw that's where I exited and re-entered the ship and decided to make things easier for me. Very considerate of them. They're accurate, too. A minute later, the cylinder floats right through the center of the open hatchway. I catch it. I wave to the blip bay and close the hatch. They probably don't know what a wave is, but I felt compelled to do it. I return to the control room and wiggle out of the EVA suit, leaving the cylinder to float near the airlock. The ammonia smell is powerful, but I'm ready for it this time. I put the thick lab gloves on and grab the cylinder. Even through the fireproof gloves, I can feel the warmth. I know I should wait for it to cool down, but I don't want to. It looks the same as before. I unscrew it the same left-handed way. This time, there's no star map. Instead, it's a model. What am I looking at here? A single post from the base holds up an irregular shape. No, 2 irregular shapes connected by a tube. Hey, wait. One of the ships is the Hail Mary. Oh, and the other one is the Blip A. The models have no detail or texture, but they're good enough for me to recognize what they represent. So they did their job. The Hail Mary is only 3 inches long, while the Blip A is closer to 8 inches. Man, that ship is huge. And that tube connecting them? It connects to the Hail Mary's airlock and leads to the center of the Blippi's diamond-shaped segment. The tunnel is just wide enough to cover my airlock door. They want to meet. I let the model float in the middle of the room. The xenonite is nearly indestructible, so I don't need to worry about it bumping into anything. Is this a good idea? I have a planet to save. As awesome as it is to meet up with intelligent aliens, is this risk worth it? The Iridians clearly understood astrophage, at least well enough to make engines out of it. And, I think, they're trying to tell me they're here for the same reason I am. They might have information I don't know. They might even have the solution I'm looking for, and they seem friendly enough. But this is the interstellar equivalent of a stranger offering me candy. I want the candy, which is information, but I don't know the stranger. What's my alternative? Ignore them? I could carry on with my mission as if I never saw them at all. They're probably as spooked to see me as I am to see them. They might continue trying to talk, but they wouldn't get hostile, I don't think. Or would they? I have no way of knowing. No, this is a no-brainer. I've got to at least have a conversation with them. If they have any information about astrophage at all, no matter how minor, I have to talk to them. It's a risk, yes, but this whole mission is a risk. Okay, so what would I do if I were them? I'm an Iridian. I want to build a tunnel that connects to the weird human ship, but I don't know what the human ship's material is made of. How can I guarantee any kind of attachment or seal? My xenonite knowledge is beyond dispute, but how do I connect it to humanium, or whatever that ship is made of? I've sent the human xenonite models, so he knows what I have, but I still don't know what he has. They'll need a sample of my hull, and they'll need to know it's a sample of my hull. Right, I say to no one. I don't know if this is a good idea or a terrible idea, but I'm going to knock a chunk of my hull off. I grab a set of EVA tools. They live in the lab in drawer 17E. I found them a while ago. They're on a tool belt that can clip onto the EVA suit, and everything Strat and the gang made sure we had all the equipment we would need for hull repairs if needed. Normally, it would be Ilyukuna's job to fix stuff, but she's gone. Huh. Random memory. She was our engineer, our fix-it gal. Okay, well, now it's me. I get back in the EVA suit and back outside. Again, bouncing in and out is getting kind of annoying. I hope this tunnel thing works. I make my way along the hull, one tether adjusting at a time, and I get to thinking, what good is a tunnel exactly? I doubt we have compatible environments. We can't just connect the ships with a tunnel and shake hands. I think there's a lot of ammonia over there. And then there's the temperature. Those cylinders are hot when I get them. Some back-of-the-napkin math tells me that the first cylinder they sent should have lost 100 degrees Celsius or more during the 40-minute trip, depending on what temperature it started at. And it was still hot when I got it. So it was really hot when it left their ship, like way higher than the boiling point of water. I try not to speculate too wildly, but come on, I'm a scientist, and these are aliens. I'm going to speculate. Do Iridians live in an environment hotter than the boiling point of water? If so, it proves I was right. The Goldilocks zone is bullpucky. You don't need liquid water for life. I should be more focused on the first contact with intelligent aliens thing, or the save all of humanity thing. But gosh darn it, I can spend a moment to be happy about being right when everyone said I was wrong. I finally reach a spot of hull that seems right for the job. I'm aft of the entire pressurized portion of the ship, well past the part where it widens out. If I'm right, I'm standing on a big empty tank that used to be full of astrophage. If I breach the hull here, it shouldn't matter. I pull out a hammer and chisel. Not the most elegant way to do this, but I can't think of anything better. I start by putting one corner of the chisel on the hull and giving it a little tap. There's a notable dent. It doesn't take much to get through this outermost layer. I use the hammer and chisel to separate a 6-inch circle of hull material. There's a layer of something underneath. I can feel it with the chisel, probably insulation. I have to pry the circle out with the chisel. The under layer holds strong, but then gives way suddenly. The hull sample flies off into space. Shoot. I leap off the ship. I get a hand on the circle right before my tether snaps tight. I breathe for a second, thinking about how dumb I am, then pull myself back along the tether to the ship. Looking at the circle, it seems like there's a light, foam substance attached to the underside. Styrofoam, maybe. Probably something more complicated than that. I hope you guys watched all that, I say, because I'm not doing it again. I throw the whole chunk at the blip A. By doing this right in front of them, they'll know for sure I'm sending them a sample of the hull. I hope it's enough for what they want to do. I don't even know if they wanted it or needed it. They might be looking at their screens right now and saying, "What is this idiot doing? Is he poking a hole in his own ship? Why?" I stay on the hull and watch as the chuck tumbles into the towelite. The multi-armed robot on the Blip A's hull slides along its rails for the reception. Once positioned, it waits for the hull chunk to arrive and makes a perfect catch. And then, I swear to God, it waves at me. One of its little arms waves at me. I wave back, it waves again. Okay, this could go on all day. I head back toward the airlock. Your move, guys. Their move is taking a long time, and I'm getting bored. Wow. I'm sitting here in a spaceship in the Tau Ceti system, waiting for the intelligent aliens I just met to continue our conversation, and I'm bored. Human beings have a remarkable ability to accept the abnormal and make it normal. I look through the controls of the radar panel to see what other features it has. After some digging through preference dialogues, I find what I'm looking for: the proximity warning parameters. Currently set to 100 kilometers. Fairly reasonable. You would expect things to be millions of kilometers away. Tens of thousands at the very least. So if some rock is within 100 kilometers of you, that's a major problem. I change the setting to 0.26 kilometers. I worry it'll reject the setting as too low, but it doesn't. I stretch my back and float out of the pilot seat. The Blip A is 271 meters away. If they get closer than 260 meters, or if they send another present that gets within that range, the proximity alert will go off. I don't have to sit here and stare at the screen anymore. The control room will blare a warning when the Blip A does anything interesting. I float down to the dormitory. "Food," I say. The arms pull a box out of their little stash in the ceiling and stick it to my bunk. Someday I should look around in there and see what's available. For now, I kick off the ceiling and float down to the food. The box, labeled Day 10, Meal 1, has a Velcro-like strip on the bottom that helps it stay in place on the bedsheet. I open it up and see a burrito. Not sure what I expected, but okay. Burrito it is. Turns out it's a room temperature burrito. Beans, cheese, some red sauce, all pretty tasty, really. But room temperature. Either the crew doesn't get hot meals around here, or the machine doesn't trust a recent coma patient not to burn himself on hot food. Probably the latter. I float up to the lab and put the burrito in the sample furnace. I leave it in there for a few minutes before pulling it out with tongs. The cheese bubbles and a cloud of steam slowly emanates out in all directions. I leave the burrito to float in the air and cool. I snicker. If I really wanted a hot burrito, I'd turn on the spin drives, do an EVA, and hold the burrito in the light emitted from it. That'd get it hot really quick. As in, it would get vaporized along with my arm and whatever else was in the blast range because, ha, I say to myself, so that's how the spin drive works. I munch on the burrito. So I guess I have 1,000 of those, 1,009. I hear Dimitri's voice in my head. At least that's how many I started with. Some probably were kaput during the trip. There's probably a panel on the spin drive console that'll tell me the status of each little one. The proximity alert interrupts my thoughts. Finally! I drop the burrito, it floats where I leave it, and launch myself up to the control room. The hatch from the dormitory to the lab doesn't line up with the hatch from the lab to the control room, but there's a diagonal line of travel that will send me through both if I do it just right. I don't get it right this time. I have to push off a lab wall en route. Still, I'm getting better at it. I check the radar panel, and sure enough, the blip A is approaching. Not a cylinder this time. The whole ship is coming my way, nice and slow. Maybe they're going for a non-threatening kind of approach. In any event, it's almost here. Looks like its hull has a new addition. In that diamond part that's as big as the whole Hail Mary, there's a cylindrical tube sticking straight up. The hull robot is sitting next to it, looking proud of itself. I may be anthropomorphizing a tad. The tube looks like xenonite, patchy gray and tan with grain-like lines running its length. Hard to tell from this angle, but it also looks to be hollow. I think I know what comes next. If they follow the plan they indicated with the model, they'll be putting the other end of it against my airlock. How will they attach their tunnel? My airlock does have docking capability, probably for whatever ship brought me and my crewmates to the Hail Mary, but I can't expect Iridians to know the intricacies of a universal airlock. The blip A edges ever closer. What if there's a mistake? What if they miscalculate? What if they accidentally poke a hole in my hull? I'm all that stands between humanity and extinction. Will an alien math error doom my entire species? I hustle to the airlock and pull out the EVA suit. I'm in there in record time. Better safe than sorry. The blip A is so close now the telescope screen just shows a patch of mottled hull. I switch to the external cameras. My hull is littered with them. They're all controlled from a window on the EVA panel. Always good to know where your astronaut is when giving them EVA instructions, I guess. The tunnel is about 20 feet long, or 7 meters. Man, being an American scientist sucks sometimes. You think in random, unpredictable units based on what situation you're in. The hull robot reaches out with some seriously telescoping arms. I had no idea it could do that. It extends well beyond the tunnel toward my airlock. Not creepy at all. 5 ever-growing alien robot arms reaching for my front door. No cause for alarm. Each arm's three-fingered hand is holding something. A curved bar with a flat plate attached on the ends, like a coffee mug handle. Three of the arms reach the Hail Mary and stick to the flat parts of their devices to the hull. Shortly after, the other two arms do the same. Then, all five retract, pulling the Hail Mary toward the tunnel. Okay, so those flat things are handles. How are they attached? Good question. My hull is smooth and made of non-magnetic aluminum. Why do I remember that all of a sudden? The handles certainly aren't connected by any mechanical means. Must be an adhesive. And it all starts to make sense. Of course they aren't going to work out how the docking mechanism works. They're going to glue one end of the tunnel to my ship. Why not? Much simpler. My ship groans. It's a 100,000-kilogram piece of equipment that was definitely not designed to be pulled along by its airlock. Will the hull put up with this? I double-check the seals on my EVA suit. The control room moves around me. It's not fast, just a few centimeters per second. Hey, for small spaceship velocities, I think in metric. Much better than cubits per fortnight or whatever. I let the wall catch up to me. And some lizard brain level. I like being a little farther from the airlock. Some scary stuff is going on over there. Clunk. The Iridian tunnel has hit the hull. Clicks and scrapes follow. I watch the hull camera feeds. The mouth of the tunnel, now firmly held to the airlock aperture, is larger than the entire airlock door. I guess that's that. Presuming the glue will hold pressure, they don't even know what my atmospheric pressure is. What's the glue made of? So many questions. I can't operate the control room panels with my EVA suit gloves. I wish I could zoom in or something. I squint at one of the feeds showing the tunnel. It sure looks tight against the hull to me. There's some curvature to the hull around that spot, kind of a complicated shape to make, but the Iridians duplicated it perfectly. After another minute, the robot arms let go of their handles, leaving them on the hull. A muffled sound comes from the airlock. It's a whooshing sound. Is that airflow? They're pressurizing the tunnel? My heart races. Can my hull handle this? What if their air dissolves aluminum? What if aluminum is highly toxic to Iridians and one whiff of it kills them instantly? This is a terrible idea. The whooshing stops. I gulp. They're done. Nothing dissolved yet. I flow over to the airlock for a look-see. I had both airlock doors sealed, of course. More protection in case of a breach. I open the inner door and float inside. I peek out the porthole window. The blackness of space gone, replaced with the blackness of a dark tunnel. I turn on the helmet lamps and angle my head to shine light through the porthole. The end of the tunnel is too close. I don't mean I'm bothered by it. I mean the end of it is not 20 feet away. It's more like 10 feet. And while the rest of the tunnel is made of gray and tan blotchy xenonite, the wall at the end is a hexagonal pattern of random colors. They didn't just connect a tunnel. They connected my airlock to theirs with a wall in the middle. Clever. I close the inner airlock door with me inside and depressurize it. I spin the outer door's hatch handle and push. It opens without resistance. The tunnel is a vacuum. At least it is on my side of the divide. I think I see. This is a test. They had all the same concerns I had. Attach it, Let me pressurize my half with my air and see what happens. Either it works or it doesn't. If it works, great. If not, they'll try something else. Or maybe ask me to try something else. Okay, let's see. I tell the airlock to repressurize. It refuses. The outer door is open. Nice to know that safety interlock is there, but I'll have to work around it. It's not hard. There's a manual relief valve that will just let air from the ship into the airlock. It bypasses all computer controls. You don't want someone to die because of a software malfunction, right? I open the relief valve. Air rushes in from the Hail Mary, and with the airlock wide open, to the tunnel. Within 3 minutes, the airflow slows and then stops. My suit readings tell me there's 400 hectopascals of pressure outside. The Hail Mary has equalized with my part of the tunnel. I close the relief valve and wait. I watch the external pressure gauge on my EVA suit. The pressure stays put at 400 hectopascals. We have a good seal. Iridians know how to glue xenonite to aluminum. Of course they do. Aluminum's an element, and any species that could invent xenonite in the first place must know their way around the periodic table 1,000 times better than we do. Time for a leap of faith. I pop the seals of the EVA suit and climb out the back. The strong smell of ammonia permeates the air, but it's otherwise breathable. It's my own air supply, after all. I push the EVA suit back toward the airlock. The helmet lamps are my only source of light, so I finagle the suit so the lights stay pointed down the tunnel. I float over to the mystery wall and reach out to touch it, but stop short. I can feel the heat even from a few inches away. Iridians like it hot. In fact, I'm starting to sweat. The tunnel walls are heating up my air. It's uncomfortable, but not too bad. I can open the Hail Mary's inner airlock door if I want my climate control to take over. Then our life support systems can figure it out. They'll keep the hot side hot, and I'll keep the cold side cold. Even with the sweat forming on my brow and the strong ammonia odor making my eyes water, I press on. I'm just too curious not to. Could anyone blame me? There are at least 20 little hexagons on this wall. They're all different colors and textures, and I think a couple of them might be translucent. I should catalog each one and figure out if I can identify what they're made of. Looking closer, I see there's a definite seam running along the edges of the hexes. That's when I hear a sound come from the other side. Knock, knock, knock. They knocked, so it's only polite for me to knock back. I know that wall is going to be hot, so I wrap my knuckles on it as fast as I can. I knock 3 times, just like they did. There's no immediate response. I take a good long look at the hex wall. There are 40 hexes, I'd say, and each one seems to be unique. Different materials, maybe. I feel like I'm supposed to do something here, but what? Are they watching me? I don't see anything that looks like a camera. I hold up my finger and point back to my airlock. I don't know if they can see me or if they have any idea what that hand gesture means. I kick off the hex wall and back to the airlock. And then I open the inner door. Why not? The pressure is the same on both sides. It's okay to leave the airlock open. If there's a pressure loss in that tunnel, the air leaving the ship will slam the inner airlock door shut, and I'll get to stay alive. I go to the lab and pack a bag with a few choice items, then return to the tunnel. First, I tape LED lamps to various spots along the tunnel and aim them at the hex wall. Now I can see what I'm doing, at least. I pull out my trusty handheld X-ray spectrometer and scan one of the hexes. It's xenonite, almost the same composition as the cylinders they sent me earlier. Almost. There are a few differences in the trace elements. Interesting. Maybe xenonite is like steel. Lots of different recipes. I check the next hex over. Another slightly unique combination. Best guess? Different types of xenonite are optimal for different situations. They had no idea what my air was like, so they want to test various compounds against it. When I leave the tunnel, they'll inspect the hexes to decide which one fares best. That means I should leave the tunnel. Should I depressurize my side for them? Seems polite. I could easily do it. I'd just tell the airlock to cycle. It would think, golly, there sure is a lot of air in me today. But would just keep pumping until there was a vacuum. But then again, maybe they have a way of sampling the air on this side. If so, I should leave it here, right? I decide to leave it be. They probably have a sampling technique. If I were making this tunnel, that's what I'd do. And they seem pretty bright. I turn back toward the airlock, but something catches my eye. Movement. I shoot my attention back to the hex wall. Nothing's changed, but I could swear I saw something move. Some of the hexes are shiny. I probably caught a glimpse of my reflection. Wait, one hex stands out. Why? It's near the tunnel wall, not very obvious. I float over to take a closer look. Holy cow, I say. This hex is clear. All the others are opaque, but this one is like glass. I pull one of the lamps off the wall and hold it up to the hex. I press my head against the hot wall to get a closer look. Light gets through into the other side. I can see the tunnel walls beyond. Either their side is a vacuum or their air is clear. Either way, there's nothing blocking or dulling my view. Suddenly a rock hits the other side of the hex. It stays there. It's just a few inches away from me. It's roughly triangular, kind of a dark brown, and has rough jagged edges, like you might see on the tip of a spear from a caveman. Have I met spacefaring cavemen? Stop being stupid, Ryland. Why did they put a rock there? And is it sticky? Are they trying to block my view? If so, they're doing a terrible job. The little triangle is only a couple of inches wide at the thickest point, and the hex is a good 8 inches across. And it gets sillier. Now the rock is bending at articulated joints, and there are two similar rocks that do the same thing, and there's a longer rock attached to them that's not a rock. It's a claw. It's a claw with three fingers. I'm desperate to see more. I press my face against the hex. It burns, but I resist the urge to pull away. There's pain, yes, and it's probably going to leave a mark. I should go back to the lab and find a camera, but come on. No one would have that presence of mind at a time like this. I groan as my face aches, but I'm rewarded with a better view. The alien's claw, or I'll call it a hand, that's less scary. The alien's hand has three triangular fingers, each one with articulation points. Knuckles, I guess. They can close up into a raindrop shape or widen out to a sort of three-legged starfish. The skin is weird. It looks like brownish black rock. It's irregular and bumpy, like someone carved the hand out of granite and hasn't gotten around to smoothing it out yet. Natural armor, maybe? Like a turtle shell, but less organized? There's an arm, too. I can barely see it from this angle. No matter how hard I stupidly press my face into the hot wall of pain. But there's definitely an arm leading away from the hand. I mean, there'd have to be, right? Not just a magic floating hand. I can't take the pain anymore. I pull my head away. I feel my face. It's pretty raw, but there aren't any blisters. Tap, tap, tap. The alien is tapping the clear hex with a finger, so I flick it with my finger 3 times. Taps the hex again 3 times, so I tap again as well. Then comes something creepy. The claw hand retreats and returns with an object that holds it against the clear hexagon. Whatever it is, it's small. I let myself drift closer to the wall for a better look. The heat warms my face. The object is xenonite, of course. It's about a half inch high and finely detailed. It looks like a doll, but it has an oversized head and really thick arms and legs. Oh, it's me. It's a teeny tiny Russian Orlan MKS2 EVA suit. That's all they've seen of me so far. Another hand shows up. Hey, I have 2 hands, so I shouldn't be surprised that they do too. The second hand holds a model of the Hail Mary. It looks to be at the same scale as the figurine of me. The hands then push the little me into the little Hail Mary's airlock. Pretty clear, it's saying, go back into your ship. I give a thumbs up. The alien releases Mini-Me in the Hail Mary model to float away. Then it contorts a hand into something resembling a thumbs up. It's just 2 fingers curled into a ball with the third pointed up. At least it's not the middle one that's pointed up. I return to the Hail Mary and close the airlock door behind me. I pant and wheeze with excitement. I can't believe that just happened. That's an alien. I just saw an alien, not just an alien ship, an alien being. I mean, just his claw or hand. But yeah, well, I say his hand, but maybe it's her hand or some other pronoun I don't have a word for. They might have 17 biological sexes for all I know, or none. No one ever talks about the really hard parts of first contact with intelligent alien life. Pronouns. I'm going to go with he for now, because it just seems rude to call a thinking being it. Also, until I hear otherwise, his name is Rocky. Okay, now what? Rocky told me to go back into my ship, so I did. I feel kind of stupid. There's a whole bunch of science I should be doing, right? I peek through the airlock porthole. My lamps are still taped to the walls in the tunnel, and I can see there have been some changes. The hex wall is gone. Just plain gone. I can see all the way to the Blip A's hull. And there's a hull robot attached to it, reaching out and doing stuff with its little robot hands. And yeah, its hands look like Rocky's hands, broadly speaking. 3 fingers, about the same size as Rocky's hands. Probably controlled with a Nintendo Power Glove kind of thing inside the ship. Man, I'm old. The robot takes a particular interest in my lamps. Heck, I'd take an interest, too. Those are alien artifacts with alien technology. Sure, they're just lights, but they're alien lights to my Iridian friends over there. probably the most exciting scientific find of their history. The robot arm puts them in a little cubby on the Blippi hull, and a latch closes. I bet those are going to be the most heavily studied lamps in the history of lamps. I'm glad they've got to have that moment of discovery and all, but they took my light source away. I can hear the occasional clunk, but it's pitch dark in there. That's interesting in and of itself. I'm not an alien from 40 Eridani, but if I were working with a remote-controlled robot, I'd have a camera on it somewhere and a light source to see what I was doing. But they don't need that. They don't need light. Well, hold on. Their visible spectrum might be completely different from ours. Humans only see a tiny fraction of all the wavelengths of light out there. We evolved to see the wavelengths that are most plentiful on Earth. Maybe Iridians evolved to see different wavelengths. The room could be well illuminated with infrared or ultraviolet light, and I wouldn't see a thing. A robot. Why a robot? They had a living being there a few minutes ago, my boy Rocky. Why replace him with a robot? Vacuum. They probably took all the air out of the tunnel. They have a sample of my hull. They know it's made of aluminum and roughly how thick it is. Maybe they aren't sure if my ship can handle outside pressure. Or maybe their atmosphere reacts badly with aluminum. So they keep the tunnel a vacuum, which means they have to do work with a robot. I feel like Sherlock Holmes. All I saw was nothing, and I drew a bunch of conclusions. Conclusions that are wildly speculative and with nothing to prove them but conclusions. I could get another lamp. The lab has a few more. I could shine it in there to see what Robo Rocky is doing, but I'll know soon enough, and I don't want to be in some other part of the ship if something interesting happens. Just as I'm thinking that, something interesting happens. Knock, knock, knock. No, that's not creepy at all. Being in a spaceship 12 light years from home and having someone knock on the door is totally normal. Okay, now I need another lamp. I pinball down to the lab to grab another one, then back up to the control room. I cycle the airlock without bothering to put on the EVA suit. I turn the manual vent valves on both doors of the airlock to repressurize the tunnel. It works just like I expect. There's still a good seal out there. I open the outer door and float in, lamp in hand. The hex wall is gone. It's been replaced by a solid wall of clear material. And on the other side of that wall is Rocky. He's a spider. A big-ass spider. I turn to flee, but my rational brain takes over. Easy. Easy. They're friendly, I say to myself. I turn back and take in the scene. Rocky is smaller than a human. He's about the size of a Labrador. He has five legs radiating out from a central carapace-looking thing. The carapace, which is roughly a pentagon, is 18 inches across and half as thick. I don't see eyes or a face anywhere. Each leg has a joint in the middle. I'll call it an elbow. Each leg, or should I say arm, ends in a hand. So he's got five hands. Each hand has those triangular fingers I get a good look at last time. Looks like all five hands are the same. I don't see any front or back to him. He appears to be pentagonally symmetrical. He wears clothing. The legs are bare, showing the rock-like skin. But there's cloth on the carapace, sort of like a shirt with five armholes. I don't know what the shirt is made of, but it looks thicker than typical human clothing. It's a dull greenish brown and inconsistently shaded. The top of the shirt has a large open hole, like where the neck goes on a human's t-shirt. That hole is smaller than the carapace, so he must have to pull that shirt on by pulling it downward and sliding the arms through their respective holes. Again, like a human shirt. But there's no neck or head to go through that hole on top, just a hard-looking, rocky pentagon that sticks up a little bit from the crusty skin. On his side of the tunnel, he has handles and latticework on the walls. He casually hangs on to a couple of bars with two of his hands. I guess when you have five hands, zero G isn't that big a deal. Just allocate a hand or two for keeping in one place and use the other three to do stuff. For me, the tunnel is kind of small, but for him, it's absolutely spacious. He waves to me with a free arm. He knows one human greeting, and by golly, he plans to use it. I wave back. He waves again. I shake my head. No more waving. He pivots his shoulders to rotate his carapace back and forth. He shook his head in as much as he could. I wonder how we're going to break out of this game of Iridian see, Iridian do, but he takes care of that for me. He taps the clear wall three times with a finger, then keeps the finger extended. Is he pointing? I follow the line, and wow, there's stuff in the tunnel with me. They left me a present. I can be forgiven for not noticing. Seeing an alien kind of distracted me from the small collection of objects on the tunnel wall. All right, I say, let's see what you left me. Music sounds. That sounds like Rocky is singing. My jaw drops. Yes, I'm in zero G. It still drops. There was no pronunciation or inflection of the sounds, just notes, like whale song, except not quite like whale song, because there were several at once. Whale chords, I guess, and he was responding to me. That means he can hear, too. And notably, the sounds were in my range of hearing. Some of the notes were low, some of them high, but definitely audible. That alone is amazing when I think about it. He's from a different planet and totally different evolutionary line, but we ended up with compatible sound ranges. On top of all that, he decided my noises warranted a response. You have a language, I say. How do you have a language? You don't have a mouth. Rocky explains with more tunes. Thinking rationally, you can't make spaceships without a civilization, and you can't have civilization without being able to communicate. So of course they have language. It's interesting that communication is done with sound, like humans do. Coincidence? Maybe not. Maybe that's just the easiest way to evolve that trait. Rocky makes another note, points to the objects they left me. Right, right, I say. The whole language thing is way more interesting to me, and I'd rather explore that. But for now, Rocky wants to know what I think of his presence. I float over to the objects. They're attached to the wall with my own tape. The objects are a pair of spheres. Each one has a raised image embossed on it. One has the Hail Mary, and the other has the Blip A. I pull the Hail Mary ball off the tape. It's not warm. In fact, the tunnel isn't warm anymore. Interesting. Maybe they noticed I like things cooler and they did something to make it more comfortable for me. There's a rattle from inside the ball. I shake it and listen. More rattling. I find a seam. I rotate the top and bottom of the ball against each other, and sure enough, they rotate. Left-handed screw, of course. I look to Rocky for approval. He has no face and thus no facial expressions. He just floats there, watching me. Well, not watching. No eyes. Actually, wait, how does he know what I'm doing? He clearly knows. He waved and stuff. He must have eyes somewhere. I probably just don't recognize them. I turn my attention back to the sphere. I pull the two halves apart, and inside is a bunch more little spheres. I sigh. This raises more questions than it answers. The little beads float out and drift across my field of view. They're not individual items. They're connected to one another by little strings, like a complicated necklace. I spread it out as best I can. They look like, for lack of a better term, beaded handcuffs. Two circles of threaded beads connected to each other by a little bridge of thread. Each circle has 8 beads on it. The connecting thread has none. This seems very deliberate, but I have no idea what it means. Maybe the other ball, the one with the Blip A picture on it, will shed more light. I let the handcuffs float and pull the Blip A ball off the wall. I shake it and hear lots of rattling from inside. I unscrew the two halves, and another set of beads comes out. Unlike the handcuffs, there's only one ring in this construction, and it has 7 beads, not 8. Also, it has 3 connector strings sticking out of the circle and leading to a single bead each, kind of like a necklace with some ornaments hanging off of it. There's more stuff inside. I shake the model and another necklace floats out. I take a look, and it's identical to the one I just inspected. I keep shaking and more necklaces come out, each one the same. I collect them all and stuff them in my pockets. This reminds me of something. I thump my forehead. What does this remind me of? Rocky taps his carapace with a claw. I know he's just mimicking my movements, but it feels like he's saying, "Think, dummy." What would I tell my students at a time like this? Why did I suddenly think of my students? I got an image of my classroom, a flash of memory. I'm holding a model of a molecule and explaining, "Molecules." I grab the handcuffs and hold them out to Rocky. "These are molecules. You're trying to tell me something about chemistry." He makes a few tunes. "But wait, these are some weird molecules. They make no sense." I look at the handcuffs. "Nothing forms a molecule like this. 8 atoms on one side, 8 on the other, and connected by..." "What?" "Nothing. The connector string isn't even coming off a bead. It's just teeing off strings from the two circles." "Atoms," I say.